Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for all joining, and we'll have more join as we go here. I'm going to turn off that transcription. So welcome to the Ask Annie Secure Transport Best Practices User Group session. We're, again, happy to have you join us, and I'm just going to mention a few little housekeeping items before introducing Annie and then allowing her to get started. Just want to mention that we are recording this webinar, and I will send the recording link along with the presentation following today's session. Of course, if you have any questions throughout the presentation, Annie will be happy to address them. Feel free to just raise your hand in the bar there and speak up, and we'll be glad to address that. Or you can send a note in the chat, which I will be watching, as will Annie, and we will address your questions that way. I want to just quickly mention something. We've hosted customer user group sessions at some of our customer sites, Costco, DNB, Lockheed, our parent company, Sopra. We've had them at the locations there, and it's a great opportunity to allow you to collaborate in person with your peers. And it also, it's no cost to you, because we do all the work and we come to you. And so all we appreciate is you having a room for us to hold the meeting, and then we'll take it from there. We'll even provide lunch and refreshments. And so if you are interested in doing that at your facility, or you know somebody that in your company that I could talk to, feel free to email us at community@axway.com, and we'd love to talk to you to hold a user group session like this in person. Again, they're a wonderful opportunity, as our customers have attested to, that they love doing that. So feel free to let me know if you would like to do that, or point me in the direction of somebody that might make that decision. So without further ado, I will introduce Annie Yotova. She's our MFT architect and will be conducting today's session. Thanks, Annie.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm seeing a lot of some people from over on the other side of the ocean. So if this is your first Ask Annie, this is a question answer session. I have a live server, a variety of them today, actually. Where we can go and look at things, or if you have a question about how something looks like or where to look for it. And then any question is welcome. It doesn't matter if you are asking about server property or architecture question or migration, anything, as long as it's about secure transport or somehow related to it, go feel free to. I recognize quite a lot of the names on the session. So I know most of you had been through one of those or more. For the ones that are new, welcome. Hope you enjoy it. And with that, who wants to kick it off today? And this is the most fragile part of this meeting, until someone starts talking. Once we start, we usually don't even end on time. It usually run over. So who wants to kick it off?
Okay, we do have a question from Mark in the chat session, Annie, if you want to look at that.
Yep, and I'm seeing raised hands already. I don't see anything in the chat. Hold on.
Any way to configure a send a partner route to rename the file to deliver only if the file name already exists on the target side?
Yeah, I saw it. Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Lucy. I'm on two screens, and one of them doesn't show me the correct chat, which is weird. Okay, so Mark, what protocol are you going to be using?
Secure FTP.
So FTP or FTPS?
SFTP.
SFTP. So that's the SSH one. So unfortunately, no, because we don't have a control on the other end. So you can always rename, but we cannot go and check proactively and only rename if something is happening on the other end. Sometimes it is because we might not even have read access into the folder properly, because during a push, all we're doing is connect, log in, put a CD into the folder, put the file, and get out immediately. So we don't have a the ability to actually do anything. If you do a previous step that goes and checks stuff, and you already know, and for example, use the set flow parameter or something to put it in the environment, then we can use that. But the step itself cannot do it.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering. I didn't know if I could do a route that did like a pull from partner step, you know, to see if the file was there. And then based on the success or fail of that step, it would do a send to partner either with the normal name or a rename or something like that with expression language.
You might be able to. The problem, though, is that the pull from partner is not running in the same sandbox or in the same flow where you are at moment. So with the pull from partner, you can check for the file, put it eventually into the folder, then run a route that runs in the meeting through. So the challenge here is that the pull from partner doesn't pull them in the same sandbox or in the same place where your current scenario is. So you'll need to exit the current scenario. Then you can catch the result from pull from partner, which is either a file or no file found. Right. And if it is a no file found, and then you can do the rename. So can you do it? Sure, but it will be connected because your first route will need to be just the pull from partner, nothing else, with leaving the file sitting where it is. And now the challenge is, how do you get the file that was just originally uploaded to get into a sandbox for sending? Because now you'll need to figure out some times of triggering, because the pull from partner will not put the found file or the reaction from it in the same scenario. Does this make sense?
It does, yes. Thank you very much.
It's just one of those disconnected things. It's useful, but not for your kind of scenario. So in your case, you can play with it and probably manage to get it done. But it won't be as straightforward as it needs to be, not with SFTP. And the reason I ask why is because obviously with some protocols we have better control than with others.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All you're trying is not to override, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they want a standardized file name, but, you know, and they delete it after they process it. But occasionally if something fails on their end, they're like, well, if it's there, don't override it, give it a different name. And I'm like, well, okay, that gets difficult. And I was thinking with that pull from partner, and you have the check boxes to, you know, proceed on route failure or proceed on, you know, step success. I didn't know if I could branch off a route, you know, with two different send to partners, one with a rename and one without. And before I even started messing with it, I just thought I would ask.
Yeah, unfortunately, on pull from partner, the success will just tell you I scheduled this pull to run immediately. It won't tell you if I found any files or not. It's just a different, it's just the API call. It just puts it in the database, and that's what this step does inside of this route. So that won't help you at all.
Okay, thanks.
But you can run around somehow with secondary route. But one thing to be careful, of course, is how you're going to manage this long term. I would say if you can talk to your partner, just ask them, can you just add the timestamp at the end of your names always? You know, something like that. Or at the beginning, or as an extension or something, and they can just drop them, because that's the cleaner way.
Yeah, it's always our preference is to put a date stamp in the name, but, you know, you get some vendors that just, for whatever reason, don't seem to handle those kind of requests well. So I was, you know, trying to accommodate them, but I think it's just going to be more trouble than it's worth.
It's the only way for you will be to do a daisy chain. You know, run in the, and you'll need to figure out how to get this file back into a position to push it out. Because once you get the pulls from partners, you can run another route now, but the file is not there anymore because it's actually running with the one you just pulled or the one that we didn't find. So it gets progressively complicated. So just talk to your partner.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Olga.
We are getting an error. Sorry. We're getting a failure to connect to remote host. Violates maximum packet threshold. Aha. Olga, do you have any idea what software are they running on the other end?
Hello, everyone. No idea.
Okay. So the best, so a couple of things you can do. So the problem is that with the buffer sizes, so this is the incoming packet. And is this connect, is this pull or push?
Well, I'm getting the error message when trying to test the connection. I'm not even getting to the point of attempting to push or pull. By just trying to list the sites or testing the connection, it throws that error message.
Oh, it's just some.
You're cutting out, Annie.
Okay.
And you are breaking up.
Yep, I heard that. So sorry about that. Can you hear me now properly?
Yes, I can hear you properly.
Yes.
Okay. Hold on a second. My VPN dropped my connection again. I'm having the usual fun with my VPNs. I think it just doesn't like TMs together with itself. If you go into the advanced settings, there are a couple of buffers.
Whereabouts?
Set up over there. You might want to play with them to try to match the other on the transfer side.
So you said on the transfer side, because your line is very bad. I don't know, if you don't mind, you can write the instructions. I can follow them because I don't just.
Yep. I will. Sorry.
Thank you.
Let me see.
Your audio is cutting out, Annie.
Yeah, we really can't understand at all.
No. Annie, does it help to drop off and come back in? Can't hear you.
Okay, is this better?
Keep talking.
Okay. Let me drop off and I'll...
No, that... So now you're good.
Oh, okay. I switched lines and I was hoping it will catch up.
Okay.
So...
Now we can
okay.
Hear you.
Okay. And I think you're seeing the browser as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's hope this holds. Okay. So on the transfer site. There are ones. It's the buffer sizes. One of them, usually the connection read or write buffer, is the one that is the problematic one in this case. Unless they're running some kind of software that is compliant, play with how much is unclear. Part of the issue is that unless they tell you what they are doing, sometimes it's impossible. And that's why I asked you if it is pull or push. If it is on the connect itself, it shouldn't be the buffers, but it might be the block size of this FTP message, the one over here at the bottom. So try to change those, see if the message is changing, is the best I can say based on the error.
Okay, I'm trying that.
Yeah, because it's, there is, the problem is the package size. And what is happening when we connect is that they're supposed to respond with a specific length after the two servers negotiate between them. And that's what the error is telling you, that the packages don't match. We expect one length, something else is receiving, is getting received, which means that the other server is either not receiving our request properly, or they don't know how to handle it. That's why meeting them in the middle might be the way to go. So I would increase the block size of the SFTP over here a little bit and see if that changes anything. Start from there. And if that doesn't help, get our support to look with you, but you'll probably need networking access because someone will need to inspect the package and see where exactly the communication falls through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've tried that. It doesn't seem to work.
That's the best you can do without actually working with them. The other thing is, if you have a communication line with your partner, ask them what kind of server are they using.
Mm-hmm.
And what version? Because we are RFC compliant and we're a Maverick server. If they're an open SSH server, which is building on top of some of the newer features that are not RFC compliant, but that you work with other open SSH servers, I've seen these kind of problems in this case, simply because we're very strict on the RFC. And the library we're using, Maverick, is much stricter than OpenSSH ever had been.
Okay.
And if they, most of their other partners are OpenSSH, maybe they have some checkbox somewhere to make it more strict.
Okay.
So that's all you can do from the SD side of the house, unfortunately. And there is no checkbox on our side that says be less RFC compliant. We're always trying to be as secure, as compliant, you know, the whole 9 years, which is annoying sometimes. I would admit that.
Yeah.
But yeah, my gut feeling is it will turn out to be an OpenSSH derivative on the other end, because that's where I've seen these kind of issues before. Which also means if you just go on the OS level and try to open the connection from there, it will work beautifully, perfectly fine, because OS level servers are OpenSSHs.
Mm-hmm.
So makes it even harder to troubleshoot. But if you haven't tried yet, is this site going through the edges or is it going directly out?
SSH.
No, I know it's SSH, but in the zone
DMZ. It's going by DMZ.
DMZ. Okay. Yes. So if it's going through the DMZ, log in on the edge, one of the edges, and try to just connect to the SSH from the edge directly. If this is really an OpenSSH versus Maverick thing, the OpenSSH will connect.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you so much.
Yep, if that doesn't work either, you might be looking into a firewall discrepancy somewhere. Something somewhere is getting your packages either cut or expecting bigger ones, but that's where I would start. If it works from the edge directly, but doesn't work from ST, get our support to try to help you, because we're talking Maverick versus OpenSSH most likely. But if the edge cannot connect either, then go to your partner and it's not Maverick, it's now OpenSSH. If both of them cannot connect, something somewhere is not responding as it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's not the answer, but unfortunately, until you chase down exactly what's going on, there is no real solution for something like that.
Sure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Okay. Raquel, is there a way to verify that our local certificates are attached to bare minimum certificates for ST to operate? Oh, my favorite question. So
good.
There is no easy way to find out what is attached to what, unless you want to go dig through configuration. One thing is, because those usually have a very specific names, if you go to server configuration and type the name of your certificate in the value, AdminD, for example,
uh-huh,
it will pop up all of them and you just look through few of them, oh, say alias and so on.
Okay.
So another thing to look for, if you look for the work alias as a parameter, this is always referring to a certificate. So if you go that way, you'll see what is referenced. There are some that obviously are not certificates, but you can ignore them. But most of them will be like that. So cert alias for the rep encrypt and so on. Trusted aliases, you know, that's the way to look at easiest. You can do it with API, of course, but you know, I know.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. the same.
Okay.
Now, this will also show you, see how even the listeners, if they're attached to a listener, they will also show up here, even if you cannot edit from here. So I personally prefer that way. Look for alias, but also once you find all of them and once you look at the list of them over here,
mm-hmm.
of the certificates, just get the names one by one and use them as a value for server configuration and see where they pop up.
Okay.
What you will not see if some of them are used inside of transfer sites or inside of steps. For that, the cleanest way, do an XML export.
Yep. I was wondering. Okay. Is it in there? Okay.
Yeah. It will be referenced by the name of it. So if you do XML export and look for AdminD, you'll see it and so on. Okay. The minimum ST requires to run is a single certificate. Technically speaking, you can use a single AdminD certificate for absolutely everything and ST will function.
Really?
However, yes. It's not recommended because you're basically putting every single egg you have and then some more into the same basket. Yeah. And if you have edges, you need a special certificate to run the edges to server communication. It's not allowed to use the AdminD one.
Okay.
So if you have servers and edges, you have at least two of them. The AdminD is the only one that is always called that way. Everything else can be called any way you want.
Okay.
It is the other one that always needs to be called specifically is MDN. This is for the message disposition notifications for those, you know, on the tracking table, this small envelope at the beginning, that's where it needs to be called MDN. Okay. The repository encryption one is usually called rep encrypt, but you can change that these days. I still always call it that way because it's easier to note. You'll usually have at least one or more for the different protocols. So a normal server will have between, I don't know, two and six at least.
Okay.
But technically speaking, as well, if you don't have edges, you require a single one. And if you have edges, we need two of them.
One at least two.
Yeah, at least two. And I've seen people trying with one. Actually, ST will not stop them. It just doesn't work very well or can backfire on you.
Okay. I think that's our struggle is if we have to replace one of these, where all do we have to update?
Nowhere. If you replace it in place, it will update automatically. If you're changing the name. Yeah. If you just do replace in place, you know, when you go into, for example, into generate or import, if the name already exists, it will ask you if you want to override. If you say yes at this point, you override and this certificate will start getting used everywhere where the old one was assigned, as long as you keep the name. If you change the name, and with AdminD, you cannot even do that, obviously, because the administration UI only works with AdminD. But if you're changing the name, then you do that. You go to server configurations to see if there is server configuration, and you can use either the API or the XML export. I personally do XML export for that kind of stuff because it's faster.
Yeah.
It's cleaner to just grab everything, find it, and then just follow through.
Okay. Thank you. So,
but yeah, if you're replacing in place, unlike routes that are referenced by ID, certificates are still referenced by name. So as long as you keep the name, we really, really, really don't care that the certificate is different now.
Okay. Thank you.
And don't forget that if you have edges and you replace a certificate, you might need to go and play on the edges as well.
Yes.
As a reminder, I'm not going to tell you how many times I get called because everything broke and they just replaced the certificate on the server and forgot the edges. Yep. So that's it. It's the same with the trusted CAs as well, locals and so on. It's straightforward. We always reference by alias. So. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Michael, transfers not hanging up, even though the transfer was successful in the second try, the first attempts would cancel. Let me see if I can see that on a little bigger screen. Michael, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. It actually started happening very soon after we had upgraded to February patch 3204.
And it stays canceled forever? It doesn't.
It stays canceled forever. It does not. Yeah, it doesn't go. And in some cases, this isn't very often, but in some cases, like it'll show in a failed sub-transmission state for the inbound, and then every subsequent one for outbound will show in this cancel state. That's yeah, it's back. Really strange. I haven't seen this before.
Me neither, but I've seen something very similar happening when there was a corrupted record. So one thing to do, go to the new menu that we have about the events, the event queue.
Yeah.
And see if those that are the cancels will show up on the list here. They should, if this is what's going on. So there are two options here. One of them is that the event is still in the event table for some reason. It is not getting cleared. The other option is this is just a tracking table issue. So start with the event queue and see if the ones that are still showing cancel, if they actually are here in the event queue as well.
Okay.
And if they are, you know that I'll send you to support with that, obviously, yeah, because yeah. I cannot help with that. But before you go, just check to see if the event is still in play. I've seen a similar problem. So when you updated last time, did the update work from the first time?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Sorry. When you updated ST the last time,
mm-hmm.
did the update work from the first time or did you have to redo it twice?
I believe in prod it was fine. I think in our test environment I had to do it twice, but I'm not seeing this in the test environment. I think prod was fine. I'll have to go back and look at my notes.
The reason I'm asking is because I had a very weird experience with a server where the update failed, mm-hmm. but no one did a rollback. Instead, they did the update a second time immediately after that. And it was...
Oh, you're cutting out again.
Showing but weird. Okay. Is this better?
Yeah, it's a little better, but yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on today with all of my internets. I was having a problem where an update failed. It didn't roll back and instead run a second update on top of the first. And that left some files in a weird shape. And the tracking table was influenced that way.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I asked.
Yeah, I'll go back and review my notes. I don't think that was the case in prod, but it I don't remember because it was a couple months back, actually a few months back.
And this just started happening?
It happened when we went to the February patch.
Okay.
Prior to that, I forgot what level we were on, but it was only about 8 months. So, I mean, it wasn't like after a full year.
How often does it happen?
This is daily. And it's not particular to this one. It could be any of our transfers.
You know, it almost feels like there might be an old file somewhere on the system from before the update.
From like a completely failed? Yeah.
Cannot reconcile.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll look through that through the event queue and then and then go through support. Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Yep. I have another question on the chat. Is it better security wise to request partner to authenticate their password or key? Always a key. Security wise, keys are always more secure than passwords. And in ST, you can even do double key plus password to even make it more secure. But passwords rely on a user not using their birth date as part of their password or things like that. So it's a lot easier to steal someone's password than a key. And I don't have a name for the person that asked that question.
Actually, so my name is Mark. The follow-up question to that is, thank you for answering. How do you set it up so that a partner can authenticate via password or SSH key?
Oh, that's, we're on the correct page to show you. So when you go to the login settings, you can do, for the end users, see where it says optional for passwords. So you leave it on optional for password. For the keys, it's per protocol. So when you go on the, let's do SSH, because that's what you're asking for originally. Sorry. When you go to the daemon settings, it's the listener settings. Always mess them up. Over here, see where it says client certificate?
Mm-hmm.
If you do that optional, that means that we'll first try to do a key, and if they don't provide the key or something, they can go for password. So if you keep both passwords and certificate on optional, what will happen with the server is that the server will say, tell the customer that we want the key, but if they don't have a key, we'll allow them a password instead. So they can use either.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, if you have edges, this setting is on the edges, not on the servers. The one for the passwords need to be set on the servers, but for the certificates, you go where the daemon is.
Okay, got it. Thank you so
much. Make sense?
Yep.
Okay. And obviously, you also have required here, which will mean everyone needs to have a key. And because it's on the listener, by the way, and because I know you are new, you can have two different listeners on separate ports, and you can make one of them mandatory certificate while the other one allows both or either, any way you want to do it, if you want to do that.
Okay. All right.
So, and then you can make it a lot more secure that way. But also, don't forget that you have dual authentication as well. So if you want to force your customers, you can do required, you can, my bad. You can actually have dual authentication for them, which will require both password and certificate. And in this case, it's certificate or key first. We cannot change the order. We always ask for the key first.
Okay. Got it. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Olga, I can see the error. Get our support to look into that. I think it's Maverick and OpenSSH not liking each other.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. It's basically, the good news is that something is changing, which means that at least they're reading what you have. So it might be just a question of adjustments of what needs to be over there. And you might need to talk to your partner, as much as none of us like doing that occasionally.
All right.
But I've seen these kind of errors when one of the servers is trying to be too clever for its own good.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know how that goes. I'm interested. But yeah, if you talk to them, first question that our support will ask you, do you know what they're running on the other end anyway? So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't see anything else in the chat. So, what else do we have? I have a raised hand, or is it older? Nope. Oh, yeah.
Hey. Hey, Annie. Kamesh here from DNB. We had an issue recently for a mprot file wherein actually support has suggested us to increase the partitions to 10. So just wanted to understand more on what the partition is doing and how that it handles the file processing there when there is they have mentioned that there wouldn't be any deadlock situations happening.
On what protocol is that?
It's for SSH.
Okay, and what was the which partitions did they tell you to change? Because we have this in a couple of
places. Partitions days to pre-build.
Oh, in for the database.
Yeah.
So the way...
just a suggestion that we had received, and we had
the software enterprise clusters.
It's yeah, we are an enterprise cluster.
Yep. So with the enterprise cluster, in order for us to be keeping more of the tracking table and the server log, we need partitions in the database, and they're based on days. So for every day, we need to build a new partition. When we switch to the next day and we need the next partition, if it is pre-built, then we can start immediately writing as opposed to taking resources to create the partition. And at this time, our TM gets a little hanged up because it cannot write anywhere. So that's the whole logic into it. It's a database thing.
Okay. So in general, is it like this partition happens by default by self? On any certain time frame in the morning or something like that? So that's where we have been seeing some latency in the file processing. Is it like, say, for example, it happens between 12 a.m. to 1 a.m. or something? Is there
it happens the moment we need to write into a new partition, which is at midnight, basically. The moment when the clock switches, we need the partition to be there to start writing. If it's not there, if it is not pre-built, we need to build it on the spot. That's why building multiples at the same time helps, because when we need to write into the next day, it's already there.
Okay, having the earlier partition being defined, does that not consume any memory for SG?
No, it's in the database.
It's in the database. So So just wanted to ensure that we do not have any DB logs that's happening on the partition, which is currently being written, and others are being free to write it upon.
Yes. Basically, so the way it works is that with the big databases, it doesn't apply for standard cluster because our baby database doesn't need that. When you have the partitions, this is for search and indexes purposes, but because our partitioning is based on the date, the moment when you switch the date at midnight, we start building partitions. That's why I usually recommend not to have any maintenance jobs running at midnight on the application either, because there is a lot of other stuff happening at midnight. We rotate other files and so on. But when exactly the partitioning happens depends on your load. It's literally the first record that needs to be written after midnight needs to have the partition already built. And if it's not there, it will start building on the spot, which will slow down everything because everyone is hanging and waiting for the partition to be built.
Okay. Now that, thanks for the details, Annie. And now on further clarification on the same point. When we say the partition numbers to be 5 or 10 or 14, whatever, what is those parameters means?
How many days ahead of time are built so that you don't need to take a break to build it on the spot?
Okay, yeah, for us, the suggestion was for 10 or 14. So when it says 10 days, we will have a partition for 10 days in advance, is it?
There empty partitions waiting in the database. So when midnight happens.
Sorry, Annie, you're cutting. Mm-hmm. Your voice is cutting.
Yeah. Kamesh, yes. That's exactly what it is. We just build them. Sorry, hold on. Okay, is that better?
Yeah, Annie.
Sorry about that. Yes, so they will be just built and stay in the database. That's all that is happening. Having them there doesn't change anything for ST itself.
Okay, got you. Thanks,
but
Annie.
What it helps is when you switch over, when we need to switch over, we don't need to do it on the spot exactly where everything else is happening.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Okay. I don't see raised hands. I don't see anything in chat. So anything else? And I have a live server. Oh, we have a question. Mark Lee, when upgrading Secure Transport to the latest version, what are some common issues that your customers are encountering? The best issue will be, so it depends on how old your previous update was, Mark. If you are just an update or two behind, usually almost none. When you have a huge leap, it's the security. Ciphers, Max, everything we had retired, but your customer base haven't because of security concerns. So you will have people that cannot connect to you and servers you cannot connect to anymore every time you switch. We'll try to keep your configuration the same as it was before the update. But sometimes we need to retire or completely disappear a cipher. And that's where things are happening. The other issues are usually coming from updated libraries. If the customer had been using something which was either a side effect or something usually on the weaker security set. But other from that, it should be pretty smooth sailing. As part of the update, we keep all of the server configurations as they were as much as possible. And I now saw that you're coming from 2022. First of all, you'll need to do a middle upgrade. You cannot jump directly into the 2024. You know that, I suspect. So you'll need to go through 2023 January, probably, is the cleanest way. And then from there, well, actually, you'll need to do two jumps because you cannot do more than 12 at the same time. And you're more than 24 months behind. With this alter for release, I would expect that 5-10% of your customer base will have ciphers or access anymore, just from general principle. And it depends on how close they were monitored. The older the customer, the more likely they're still running on old stuff. Other from that, nothing really. I mean, it should be pretty straightforward unless you go straight into a bug somewhere, which happens. But other from that, are you just updating in place or are you doing a migration out? Mark?
Just updating in place.
Okay, that's good. Because with the update in place, all of your configurations will survive. So because the new servers, when you install them, their security is a lot tighter than it used to be. So if you're doing a migration, you'll need to watch for that. Because you're in place, the only things to look at, first of all, read through all the readmes of all the releases between yours and the newest one, because there are places where we specify what we retire and so on. So anything on the list of retired ciphers, retired kinds of MAX and so on, all of that will stop working with update. But other okay. from that, there haven't been that many major changes. And I don't want to say that there had been a lot of major changes, but there had been new functionalities being added as opposed to changing existing stuff for the most part. Are you using any plugins, especially transfer side plugins?
No, we're not.
No? Good. Because some of them had changed a lot since 2022. The S3 is brand new. The SharePoint got a couple of updates. So if you are using just the standard set of protocol that comes with the product, it should be on the clear. But for example, S3, we added quite a lot of new things into it. Everything old should still be working unless it turns out that their configuration was actually set in a weird way. So that's what I would watch out for. But it will be mostly ciphers and things like that.
But you still would recommend not doing a complete jump to the latest version. We should do a hop to 2023 and then
you need, to 20. Yeah, you need two hops, actually, looking at your version. You cannot do more than 12 months hop because we don't test that. So what you need to do is going from where you are February 22. To January 23, then December 23, and then come into 24.
Okay. Okay, got it.
Yep. So the official line is we support you for 3 years. That's what the support is. However, the direct update is 12 months only.
Okay.
So And of course, you can always try, but it's a production environment. And, you know, if something fails, they'll tell you to do it anyway. So we never test more than those 12 months. And I try to keep it down to 11. Just, you know, 12 is a little cutting it. So that's why I'm saying with you in February, I would just do January and December 23 and then jump into whatever you want in 24. If you cannot find the older builds because we don't have them anymore, ask support for that and explain to them where you are and what you're trying to achieve. Because they might give you a later 22 build instead of the January. You just need to jump through.
Okay.
But it will be two jumps in this case for you.
Okay, got it.
Which is also why I'll keep telling people, keep more updated, please. Because there is such a huge amount of security changes between for the last 2.5 years that, as I said, you'll have customers that won't be able to connect.
Got it.
One other thing, by the way, and it is on the transfer sites, and we got Kamesh, I can see you, and someone else as well, but one thing, and then it's Christopher Duncan after that. So one thing to be careful with transfer site when you're pushing and pulling, and default settings. So the default ciphers that are on the server menu will only kick in if the site doesn't carry its own. So for any site, and this is where you'll see a difference between different sites that look the same, but work differently. The ones that had been saved with the custom ciphers will keep working with whatever the list was over there. The ones that are saved empty will use the default ones, and the default ones will change for you. So you might have some transfer sites not working out of the blue. Usually all you need is to go and save them, but just keep an eye on that. So I would say to just keep an eye for pushes and pulls that cannot connect anymore.
Okay,
make sense?
Yep, that makes sense.
Okay, Kamesh.
Yeah, hey, Annie. The question related to RHEL version. So currently we are on lawyer version of RHEL, which I think we will be getting out of support. So wanted to know if we wanted to move on to the latest RHEL version, is that we have to rebuild a server, or we can upgrade the RHEL alone? Will that be helpful?
It will depend on what your OS admins tell you. Don't forget that you cannot have the cluster with one server on 9 and the other on 7. I would not try in-place upgrades between 7 and 9, just because if something goes horribly wrong, you don't have nowhere to go back to. So My recommendation is build a new environment on the site and migrate everything.
Okay. So what would be in case of any custom practices that we have? So custom built things. So can that be carried forward?
Define custom.
Okay. As you know, for DNB, we have various custom components that we have built in. So just wanted to know if there is any custom components that is built that can be just simply packed and taken to the new RHELs.
Usually, so if we're talking about plugins, yes, it doesn't matter what the OS is. If it's something on the OS level and DNB built on their own, you will need to talk to whoever built it to make sure you don't have dependencies.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
But plugins don't care the OS.
So. Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Christopher Duncan.
Thank you.
Hey, sorry about that. I guess I hit a key combo when I was in another window and it raised my hand. I don't have a question.
Oh, okay. Well, are you sure you don't have to ask a question?
I'm sure.
Okay. It's okay. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, I'm not even going to try to pronounce Vitas, I think, name.
Yes, I'm Vitas from Origins. So I have a question regarding passive DR environment installation. So once you have like a shared database, which is not writable, of course, in a DR, is it possible to install the nodes simply by copying production of, you know, like installation folder into a corresponding DR server and kind of like bootstrapping those servers that way, or it needs to go through kind of like a normal installation?
The official answer is you need to go through an official installation. And the reason for that is because we're doing a couple of weird things. We don't know how they'll break in the future. So my recommendation is build it as a separate cluster somewhere against its own database. Follow the instructions to the letter. I know it's annoying. And then just point it to the correct database at the very end. You need to do that anyway.
Oh, okay. So basically,
you cannot just.
I see. So basically, install as a totally independent cluster, and then later at the very end, switch to the shared database, right? Shared database and shared and replicated file system. Okay.
Yes. Okay, if you look at that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was reading that documentation. So yeah, it seems to me kind of weird. Oh, they're saying you need to install it, but how I can install it if I don't have like functional database? I only have like read-only replica.
Yeah.
So okay.
It's the other way around. You basically install the DR as a totally separate cluster. Then you know that step where you replace the configuration IDs in the configuration file. This is the step where you tell it you're actually a DR of another environment.
Yeah.
And then after all of that is done, then you either start the replication, which is not realistic, or at this point you just repoint this server to the actual replica.
Okay, so what to do then with like a clustered file system? We use, you know, GlusterFS, so we can replicate. Can I use it like from first step when I install, you know, can I sit on that replicated file system while I'm installing DR environment? Or again, should I kind of have like a separate file system?
So we support Gluster only for home folders, and it can sit anywhere you want. Yes, okay. You can point to the same one. I would point to a replica just to be on the safe side, but it doesn't matter. The installation itself doesn't care where the home folder is.
Understood. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And when you need to update it, we actually have two parameters. One of them to tell the server, to tell the update that you don't want to start the services, and that the database is already updated. So when it comes the time to update your DR, that's pretty straightforward without breaking the replication. Okay.
Okay, so for that purpose, you only run like admin services to update, or?
Not even that.
Oh, okay.
You don't even need to run that because...
Oh, from the command line, do the update. Okay.
Yes. Are you using MSS? Which database are you using?
PostgreSQL.
Okay. So when it gets to updates, they are not in the documentation. We're working to putting them there. One of them is called DST DB update. The other one is called Start Services. They will show up in the documentation. If they don't, before you try updating your DR, open a support ticket for them to give you the instructions.
Okay.
Or I need to argue, or if they don't make it to the documentation next month or so, I'll just put them on an article in community. But there are two parameters on the installer. One of them is saying don't update the database, because in a DR situation, you are running with a replica of the production. The moment your production is updated, the database that is also replicated is also updated. So all you need is to update the binary.
Yes.
And then start services is a property that tells the servers don't start after the update, which happens automatically because your database is read-only, so it cannot even start.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the properties for that. The official rule is that you need to break the replication before you start updating, but we also know that some of the products that we use don't allow that, so...
Okay, thanks.
Just follow the, as weird as it sounds, just follow the admin guide on how to build the DR step by step. Forget about the replicated database. Just run against a plain database. Build the secondary cluster on the side, and then just switch them to point to the replicated database. That's the cleanest way.
Okay. Understood. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Do we have anything else?
Hey, Annie, I actually do have something else.
Sure.
So we are actually moving away from Oracle, but we do have the option to migrate to Oracle Rack or SQL Server.
Mm-hmm.
I know if we move to SQL Server, we'd literally have to blow away our entire environment and start fresh. However, if we move to Rack, is that a better option to what we have existing? And have you ever gone through that process before? Because it sounds painful.
It is painful, and it will really depend on your DBA and what they're comfortable doing. From ST perspective, if they can replicate the database behind the rack and they give you the scan address and you shut down ST and point to the new scan address, we really don't care that the database moved on us, literally, because Oracle and Oracle Rack is the same database.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be easier to move to rack versus trying to move to SQL.
But it's also more.
Uh-oh, you're cutting out again.
Okay.
Yep, there you are.
Is this better?
Yeah, it's a little better. So what were you saying now?
Apparently, I just need to refer. Sorry. Moving to Rack will be cleaner, yes. Because for ST, Oracle and Oracle Rack is still Oracle for us. Right. So we don't care. With Rack, we go against the scan address. So for all intents and purposes, it's just a JDBC Oracle connection is just moving to a different database. Right. What you just make sure you shut down ST completely before you move, because it cannot switch the database otherwise, but that's about it.
Okay.
But if your company's policy is to go to a different type of server, MS SQL and so on, it's not that hard. Yes, you need to blow everything and you lose the tracking table and so on, but the XML import will work. So all of your routes and accounts and certificates will come with you. So you might as well.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the least painful way to do this. But yeah, okay.
I would say...
Uh-oh, you cut out again.
I go talk to your DBA because the answer will come then.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank
I'm
you.
Back, I think. Is that better?
Yeah, it's better now. I you were cutting out with your answer, but I think I know where you were going with that. I mean, essentially talk to the DBAs.
I was saying to DBA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have anything else?
Okay, do we have any more questions or comments? Right.
Nope. Well, seems like it's been just an hour.
You want to go back, unshare, Annie? Go back to
I'm not sharing anymore.
Okay. Let's see here. Where the way the screen is doing that. Well, it's all of a sudden the why the presentation went away. It was there before. Let's see here. There. Do you see it now?
No.
Not yet.
Let me go back to presenting. I think it just kicked me out, so I'll go back in. It's coming back on. There we go. Okay, so. All right. Well, sounds like I don't see any more comments or questions in the chat. So I'll just move through. through, and then we'll give you guys a few minutes back to your day here. Just a reminder for online collaboration, and you'll again get this presentation by the end of today when we end this call, but you can click on any of the links and get questions, Q&A forums, and different information with the different links. So in our Axway community portal, so feel free to go there and get more information from what you need there. And obviously we have MFT videos on YouTube. You're welcome to look at those. And then we also do peer reviews through our G2, and you can go to the website listed here that again will be in the presentation. And as a thank you for your time, we will send you a $25 gift card. So just a little incentive there. So if there's no more questions, thank you again on behalf of Annie and myself. Thank you so much again for joining this Secure Transfer User Group session, and hope you have a great rest of your day and end of your and rest of your week. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So
in case you haven't seen, by the way, before everyone disappears, Astrid and Jerome are doing zero downtime updates. Okay, everyone is going. So, but there will be more user groups this week. So if someone haven't seen them.
Yes.
In the meantime, thanks everyone for joining. Talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.